On this episode of The Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery interviews Ian Moses, Head of Global Diversity and Inclusion for Allegis Global Solutions. Ian shares what diversity and inclusion means to Allegis Group, the structure of their successful diversity and inclusion program, advice Ian has for others looking to set up similar initiative, a hiring pool you might not be tapping into, and so much more. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and I am here today on our Edge podcast with Ian Moses, the head of global diversity and inclusion for Allegis Global Solutions. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Allegis, I think most people know about your company, a leader in global talent solutions. I'll ask you for a little more detail here in a minute. However, just for a little backstory for our listeners on how this podcast episode came together, I originally met Paul Kistner, who's the executive director with Allegis Global Solutions, who introduced me to you. I met him during your annual supplier summit, where I spoke on the topic of women in technology and leadership. I was immediately impressed by the number of women on your senior leadership team who were there in the room, but also a week prior to that, I had actually recorded a podcast with Jesse Gunther on your team and was equally impressed as I looked around the room at the staffing executives. So here I'm in a room, I'm seeing all of these senior women on your leadership team, plus around the room and seeing, I would say, the most diverse group I've ever been in front of in our industry. In large part, that's because 59%, and this was announced right before the supplier summit, 59% of your 31 suppliers carry a federally recognized minority women in business enterprise certification. So to me, that says there seems to be a real commitment to diversity top down in your company, which really led to the creation of your role. So Ian, you've been in your current position for about 10 months now. However, prior to, you were with Tech Systems in various roles for over 17 years. Share with us a little bit about why your role was created.
Absolutely. So, you know, prior to coming over to AGS, I had several conversations with different members who had worked for the organization, who I had worked with previously. And one thing that I saw was unanimous amongst most of the people that I spoke with was that there was a strong desire for inclusion and diversity from a lot of the individuals who work for the organization. So amazing people that were all passionate about diversity and inclusion. And I felt like leadership saw the need for a more structured, focused approach to diversity and inclusion within the organization to help them with highlighting, you know, some of the amazing things that you had a chance to witness that was already taking place. But then also finding some areas where they can continue to grow, because they knew that there was plenty of work to be done in order to be the organization that they wanted to be as it pertains to diversity and inclusion. So that's kind of why the role was created and kind of lent myself towards leaning over to come over to AGS a couple months back.
Yeah, you were there at Tech Systems 17 years. So it must have been a pretty compelling role and opportunity for you to leave. Tell us a little bit more about what excites you the most about what you're working on in the program that you're building today.
Yeah, Leslie, it was difficult leaving Tech Systems. But like I said, knowing that I was coming to an organization that had this genuine desire to integrate inclusion within the fabric of all that we do was a compelling reason for me to make the move. Also looking at inclusion and diversity from a global lens was something that I had not had experience doing. So this opportunity to learn more about inclusion on a global platform was intriguing to me. You know, since my time of joining AGS, we've started to build out a structure that's encompassing of the global platform or the global landscape of the community in which we serve. And so that structure, that strategy is very familiar with many organizations such as Tech Systems and Aerotech. And where we focus this is on workforce, workplace, and marketplace. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of those things, but, you know, to kind of lead into that, I will share with you our program structure starts first and foremost with our Global Executive Inclusion Council. And so that group of people are our senior most leaders within the organization, and their focus for the organization, they're led by our Senior Vice President, Steve Schumacher. And this group of global leaders are in place to ensure that inclusion and diversity is embedded into our overall people and business strategy. So going back to that workforce, workplace, and marketplace. The next layer of IND would then be through what we call our Global All Four Council. So within each of our regions, we have an All Four Council, and we have members that act as a conduit or a liaison for various projects focused on diversity and inclusion within different parts of the globe. So one initiative may be focused on in China, may be different from what we focus on in the UK or in North America. So we have our All Four Council acting as that liaison to all things diversity within their region. And these members are simply providing feedback to myself and the executive team, providing communication and solutions relative to IND that too align to our overall business strategy. And then that final layer and structure would be our ERG. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about that, but we have five global ERGs that are regionally focused, and we utilize these resource groups as a platform for our employees to share their ideas, making sure that everyone feels like they can bring their whole selves to work, and not only bring their whole selves to work, but bring their ideas to work so that they can share these ideas, because we know some of those best ideas are sitting in our employees' brains. So, you know, the ERGs are designed to allow them to have that vehicle to be able to share and communicate those things.
It sounds like a pretty robust program, and definitely that you have that executive level buy-in. I was doing some background research, and obviously people, you know, you're starting at a certain point, and then need to work through to where you kind of reach that future state of everything you do. It just has diversity in mind, and that's what you're working towards. But I was doing some research and recently read a survey published by Allegis Group that when it comes to progress on company D&I initiatives, 71.5% of respondents said that they have a strategy and are making progress, or that they've arrived, quote unquote, yet only 37.2% reported having diversity hiring goals, which is 30.6% saying they have fairness and compensation as a goal for their organization. Now, obviously, we know we've seen the Google walkout. You've got all of these different things happening within corporations. So the more proactive you can be than reactive on this topic, the better. And it sounds like you all are being proactive. And even, again, back to the point of making sure it's a priority, even for the suppliers you work with, that speaks volumes. But for companies who are either just getting started or looking to get started, what type of advice would you have for them in setting up a program? Where's the best place to start, so to speak?
Yeah. So I want to make it be known that, yes, while we've made a ton of progress, we still have plenty to do. We don't have all the answers, and we haven't figured it all out. But, you know, when I look at any organization that's going to venture on this journey, you know, each particular organization has to understand their own reasons as to why. Why are they wanting to focus on this? What is the impact to the organization and impact to the business? You know, some of the first steps that can be done is working with your HR business partners. You know, most organizations have HR business partners that they can align with. And with those HR business partners, you want to proactively identify areas where inclusion needs to exist, or where it may not exist as you would like it to be. And so I worked heavily with the HR business partners to understand opportunities where I could be proactive in training and different workshops or inclusion labs that could take place. Maybe certain areas of the organization where ERGs could be something that we introduce, or I could interject members of the All Four Council to leverage them for matters related to inclusion and diversity. So just constantly finding ways to incorporate IND within the core of the overall business, and who better to lean on would to find out that information or to leverage would be your HR business partner.
Would you say it started at that more executive level? You mentioned a couple of SVPs who were involved, or the Global Executive Council. How did it get started? And I guess that's where some companies really struggle, and we see happen often, is that the right level of executive buy-in isn't there. And by that, I mean, well, quite frankly, investing in a role like having you in a full-time role and people dedicated around the world, in your case, to help ensure its success, but also just a budget for it, aligning it to business goals and so forth. How has that worked for you as far as getting that buy-in?
Yeah, so I can honestly say that I was very fortunate. And in coming into this situation, those were some things that I immediately wanted to understand from our most senior leadership within the organization to the very top, which is the president of our company, Chad Lane. And in having those conversations, and I'm not talking about a surface level conversation, you know, very detailed conversation as to what his objectives were, what were the company's objectives, what part did he want to play. You know, he and I talk on a monthly basis. We actually had a chance to speak this morning about some of the plans for 2019. So I think I was very fortunate to have, you know, come into a situation where there was a lot of desire and need to get this right. And so working with leaders such as Chad and Steve and some of our other global leaders, you know, did make my job somewhat easy coming in, because I knew that there was a foundation and a desire to want this, which sometimes does take a little bit more due diligence on the front end. Now, coming in and now putting in a strategy, I had to speak their language, right? And at the end of the day, we know that most executives and leaders, their focus is to, you know, drive revenue and to be a profitable organization. And so by being able to speak their language to show how diversity and inclusion plays a part in that driving of revenue and in that inclusion of their employees was something that resonated with them and was something that they really saw being beneficial to the organization and being able to take us to the next level.
It'll be interesting too to connect with you a little while from now after you've been in the role for some time to talk about results as well. Maybe we can do a follow-up piece on that, just to look at things that are being tracked per se and that are of value, and then just in general changes you've noticed within the company since having the role for the better, and things that you've kind of learned over a year into the position. So I'll earmark to follow up with you on that. That said, I'm really curious, are there any tools or training initiatives or resources from a diversity hiring perspective and whatnot that you just cannot live without? Anything that you would be willing to share that others could look into as well?
Oh yeah, there are tons of things out there and tons of partnerships out there that are very key critical into the success of this program. And, you know, one in particular I would mention is Win Insights, which is ran by a gentleman by the name of Mark Williams, who has been a huge mentor as well as a huge support to several of the programs that we've rolled out within AGS up until this point so far. So it's important to understand, you know, what exists out there and align your organization with some of those strategic partners that best suit you, because all strategic partners aren't necessarily a good fit for us at AGS. And so, you know, we will use this current year of 2019 to continue to assess some of those strategic partners that provide diversity service, whether it be from a hiring or from a development. But yes, I think it's important that every organization identifies partners that they want to work with to help them drive, whether it be hiring or inclusion or client engagement, because diversity sits within all three three of these pillars within any organization.
Okay, well, kind of transitioning from that, that's a good segue here. As we've talked about before, Harvey Nash and ARA published an annual Women in Tech survey, and ARA, again, just to explain, is Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. I'm one of the co-founders of the group. We have over 6,000 men and women who have been engaged in the program. For this particular survey, we have around 700 men and women who took it. So the results, the last survey we did, basically this is what a couple of the results said. A third of the women, so around 33% surveyed, cite an unsupportive environment as a deciding factor in leaving their last job compared to 23% of the men. Nearly a quarter, 23% of the women, moved on in due part to unfair treatment compared to just 13% of men. So there's definitely some challenges that need to be overcome as far as it relates to women being comfortable in their positions and wanting to stay in a company, you know, based on the culture and the environment, and that takes a while to shift. That said, I know I believe very, very strongly as an industry that we're really sitting on a tremendous opportunity to make change. So not only changes we're talking about within our own industry and the cultures, but also to help candidates in the companies we service, meaning we represent them, they're looking to hire talent, diverse talent, and so forth. We're trying to help them hire that talent, and then talent, we're trying to help find a job. And obviously they want to get placed in companies and roles that are good for them as well, and not an uncomfortable or unfair environment. In an industry where metrics include speed to fill, number of candidates submitted, and placements, how can we do both successfully? So achieve our metrics and goals while ensuring candidates are placed in the right environments and clients are achieving their hiring goals.
Yeah. So I'll take a step back and answer that question in two parts. When you look at the journey of most organizations, you have to see where they are, right? And typically along that journey, there are roughly five stages. You have this awareness, you have early engagement, you have the application stage, you have the integration stage, and then you have the transformation stage. And so knowing where you are as an organization can definitely help with some of those challenges that you just mentioned, right? Awareness. So often when we talk about diversity and inclusion, you know, from an awareness standpoint, you'd be surprised where some of those conversations are very limited. And it's only maybe gender or race and ethnicity is the topic. And when we learn to realize that there are so many other dimensions of diversity, we get to expand on that conversation and we get to bring more people into the dialogue or into the topic. Because, you know, by nature, if you don't fall into any of those categories, you may feel the need to remove yourself. You may see that this doesn't apply to you. But when you're looking at driving inclusion, you know, in any fashion, everyone has to be included in the conversation. So that's one thing that we've done to make sure that no one gets left out, is to create some awareness around what diversity means, as well as the different dimensions or the demographics of diversity, and be comfortable talking about those and respecting each other's differences that we bring to the table. Then when you look at engagement, you know, you're right. If people, especially people that are of that underrepresented minority group, don't feel engaged, then what are they going to do? They're going to check out. So how do you find ways to get them engaged? How do you find ways to allow them to be a part of the decision-making process, you know, that impacts the overall business? I remember, you know, coming up throughout the organization, and it wasn't until a leader allowed me to be a part of the decision-making process that I feel included. And so the more we can do this with our employees and the people that are, you know, striving to work their way into leadership roles, I think the more likely we are to retain those people. And as you're retaining those people and moving those people throughout the organization, you now have created what we call a funnel to diverse talent. So how do we now slow down to be able to take into account that there are other individuals out there that we need to make sure that we are talking to and that we have access to. And a lot of that comes through, you know, some of the bias training that we do within our organization to make sure that people are learning to slow their brains down to see the value and the differences that other people can bring to our organization. And so I encourage, you know, several organizations to do the same. Identify, you know, areas where you can have success, and then identify ways in which you can get either your recruiters or your hiring managers to a place where they understand how they can slow their brain down to be more conscious of the decisions that they're making, especially as it pertains to hiring and promoting of those underrepresented groups.
You know what, it's an important answer, and something that as an industry, I think we really need to take a look at is how, because you know, when you, as soon as you as a recruiter have an opening, you're looking to fill that opening and you're compensated on that. How do we, to your point, somehow find a way to slow it down where in the end it will benefit the company who's hiring as well as you with your results as a recruiter and the talent you're putting to work? So I think it's something we just need to take a look at as an industry again, because we're kind of sitting at that place that is so unique where we work with both the companies looking for the talent and the talent. It just seems like we're right at that pinnacle of being able to make that change. And to your point of having even you in your position and working with your company, the more as your own company, you can educate and start building it that way, it'll just naturally start trickling into the way you interact with clients and so forth, and the way that you're delivering those services to them as well.
Unemployment is at an all-time low. But I just read a stat the other day that said that unemployment amongst people with disabilities is at 9%. So think about that. That's a whole nother pool of talent that we probably haven't looked at. And we have people with disabilities that, you know, can say that they may choose not to go for certain positions because they don't know how the company is going to take them as far as the disability that they have. So how now do companies show their inclusiveness of people with disabilities, and how do they create programs or positions that allow people with disabilities to be able to work within their organization? So just that alone, you know, showed me that, hey, there is a huge talent pool that's out there that we're not tapping into just because we may lack awareness.
Right. No, it's a great point. And then understanding as the recruiter working with both, again, the talent and the company, is the company ready for that talent? Is it the right fit for them? And making sure that that's something that they take into consideration, and then being comfortable, what type of questions should I ask and how do I ask it? And really that gets back to the education piece as well. I guess shifting kind of on that topic to the point of the podcast, which is Women in Recruitment in our industry and so forth. You're the first male that we've had on our podcast, by the way, Ian. So happy to have you, and love picking your brain on your program and learning more about what you're doing. It's one of the challenges we see in general is that, I mean, again, personally hosting this podcast, I talk to women in our industry, executive women and the rising stars who were trying to make an impact for years to come for the next generation in our industry, speak to them all the time about the challenges that they've run into with various areas of their job as they've continued to rise the ranks and their roles as well. So it's something that's very important to me, is that we have men and women work together to make change. And as I mentioned before with the group I co-founded, ARA, that's a big piece of who we stand for as well, is just we can't do this alone. We have to do it together. And that's that whole point with inclusion. We have to think about inclusion in ways we can all work together to make change. Unfortunately, a lot of the stories I hear and a lot of the discussion, even if men being uncomfortable to have closed door meetings with women, or men being uncomfortable to understand what are some of these ERG groups that they're not a part of. So instead of being a part of it, it's almost like backlashing a little bit. So they're in fear because of the unknown that something terrible could happen to them. So what advice do you have for men looking to help make a difference? Something that it could even seem really small, but can make a really big impact.
Yeah, it's funny that you asked me that question today because, in talking earlier with the president of our company, we just recently sent a group of women to Linkage, which I know you're familiar with, for the first time within our organization, and a huge impact to these women, right? And they had so much opportunity to learn from each other, to, be bold and talk about some of their challenges, but then also realize, like, oh, I'm not alone in the challenges that I have. And so, with them going to that conference, now it's important to bring it back to the organization. And so our president is making some time to speak with these women separately so that he can understand kind of what their takeaways were and how do we implement some of the things that they learned from attending this conference into the organization. So I say all that because it started first with aligning with an organization, an external partner, because sometimes companies feel like they have all the answers, but it's okay to go get help. But aligning with an external partner, right, to kind of continue to create the dialogue and the content, right? Because when you're in your role, you're in your role, and you're in those weeds, and you may not see, daylight because you're so embedded in what you do every day. So to go out and get some external development from a strategic partner, I think allows us to now bring it back into the organization. And now you have a leader that wants to lift it. Now you have a leader that wants to not necessarily, have an answer for every question or every challenge that these women bring back from these conferences, but to listen and to understand how they are wired, what they're thinking, and what do they need in order to either break the glass ceiling that may sometimes exist, but also to have their voice be heard. And I think that's such an integral part of the success of an organization is when we're doing more listening than we are talking. We have two ears and one mouth for a reason. So the more that we find men having the ability to do that and not take over the conversation or the meeting, the more the women get out of it and the more the men get out of it. And so it's encouraging that type of dialogue or that type of conversation to take place first and foremost. Once you start to listen, now it's time to do something about it. And it's also important to make sure that there's an emotional connection when it comes to doing something about it. For several years, I had been a part of women DRG and women's groups, but it wasn't until I actually had a daughter that actually resonated with me why this was so important, because of, the emotional connection that I had with her and seeing a reflection of me and her and wanting to create an environment or a world in which she could be successful no matter what she wanted to do. So you also want to find that emotional connection with male leaders and our male counterparts to make sure that they, they too can see why this is so important, what the benefit to this inclusion efforts will be in 10 years from now or when you're daughters or nieces or, granddaughters are now in a position to run a corporation, how will they be received? And I think when you make that emotional connection, it allows people to feel like they have to do something, right, to move the needle. And the last thing that I will say to this point is that programs that allow for mentorship and sponsorship, right? And those are two very different things. But, me personally, one of my biggest mentors is a director, female director that I worked for. And she, to this day, is so influential in not only decisions that I have to make that are work related, but also life related. And so I think it's important that we look for mentors in all capacities within an organization. It doesn't just have to be someone who is like us. But, you know, I think I've learned more from this female leader than I had from any other leader. I'm not saying that any of those male leaders weren't great leaders, but there was a level of compassion and understanding and partnership that she brought to me that definitely elevated my thought of my train of thinking to be more inclusive of others as I not only serve up within the organization, but as also as I serve down within the organization. So finding those type of mentors and sponsors to help you, you know, figure out how to overcome some of those challenges was very key for me. And I also think it's very key for several of the women and several of the men too, as they continue to navigate their organization.
Thank you for that. And I really appreciate the male perspective on that, because women often say that they're not even sure where to go about finding a mentor or how to approach men with something and have a voice and find their voice. So it's really helpful to hear your perspective. And I have to say, your daughter is really very fortunate and lucky to have you as a dad. She'll learn so much. And obviously you bring a lot to the table that she can learn from and that you'll keep an eye out for to help her have that confidence and to have that voice and not to strip that away in any way, that she continue to speak her mind and share that, so later in life it'll be of great value to her. So thank you, Ian, for sharing that. So with that, we are coming to the end of our podcast. I do want to ask, I would feel remiss if I didn't ask this question. As an industry, most of our companies in recruitment, about 73% of the C-suite of the top 50 staffing firms have men in the C-suite, compared to 27% of women. Do you think there's an opportunity for us to break down our barriers and walls as competitors and come together as an industry to make change?
Yes, I do. I do think there's an opportunity to break down these barriers. And I think it starts with really just taking some time to look at diversity from a different lens, right? Just let's not just limit ourselves to, the most apparent, you know, the most visible things that we see, but allowing ourselves to, you know, take it layers deeper, right? Layers deeper into understanding and knowing someone for their differences and valuing those differences that they bring to the table. Because, you know, when you start to work amongst people from different backgrounds or, different age groups, we look at people from different parts of the country, you know, sometimes those interactions can be very challenging, right? Especially in the very beginning, because, you know, I'm lobbying for my, my idea. This person may be lobbying for their idea. But I noticed that when we put those differences in a room to have to work together, some of the greatest ideas are spawned, because everyone is working really hard to come up with the best idea and to make sure that their idea is something that is going to be received and respected by the others in the room. When you have a bunch of people in the room, say for example, you know, you have a bunch of Ians in the room, and I throw out an idea, and everybody's just going to agree and say, hey, yeah, I like it, you know, versus having those differences in the room at that C level. Will allow for the implementation or the ideology of ideas coming in for more people to feel comfortable, opening up and not feeling like, you know, feeling shut down when they go to express something that they think would be beneficial to the organization. So it starts there. It really starts with making sure people feel comfortable bringing their whole self to work. If you don't feel like you can bring your whole self to work, or you feel like if I bring this up, it's not going to be received, the problem is already there. And now
it's
that person
there.
Is
yeah.
essentially if that person is essentially looking for something else, or it won't take much to pull that person away. But if they feel like they have a voice and that their ideas are being heard, then you will get more productivity out of those people. And then you now put yourself in a position to explore something that we call the opportunity equation. I don't know if that's something that many people have seen or are aware of, but the opportunity equation is one that allows us to really make sure that each employee in the organization is not only getting access, but they're also building relationships and then getting development. Because once you have access to those leaders within the organization, you build a relationship with them. And once you build that relationship, you start to receive the development. And now that you've received that development, the opportunities present themselves. So that's just a little equation that we are using within our organization to make sure that everyone's getting a fair chance and a fair opportunity. Does it work across the board? No, but so we still have room for improvement, but it is something that we value as a key component to moving that needle, you know, where that there's more balance in those numbers at that C-suite level.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing that. And hopefully more companies will learn, you know, listen to this podcast, learn from you, see what companies like yours, leaders in the industry are doing and take note and start to make change. And then, you know, coming together would be a really terrific thing. Ian, I'm going to put you on the spot really quickly and with a little fun here because we've been talking a lot about some serious topics. And I've learned so much about you and your program. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Tell us one thing we didn't already know about you that others may find surprising.
You are putting me on the spot.
If I can narrow it down to one thing, what would it be?
I always want to be a chef. Went to school. Right. I went to a culinary school before I actually went to college. And my dream job was to be a culinary chef for some fancy hotel. So that's not something that a lot of people know about me because the minute they know, they want me to
cook. I know. Exactly. That was immediately what I was thinking. Like, really? We've only had a couple of people say that. We've got a sommelier dreamer. We now have a chef. I think we need to get together a little dinner group here. So anyway, thank you again so much for being on the Edge podcast. You may get some people interested in learning more about your program and just even potentially your career transition. How could they get in touch with you? What's the best way to reach you?
The best way to reach me is via LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I post a lot of articles. I share a lot of articles that I've read, and I'm, you know, I think, you know, pretty solid about returning messages. But LinkedIn would be the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay, fantastic, Ian. Thank you so much again for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you, Leslie.
Listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.